morning, ladies and gentlemen. First argument, Glade versus United States. Mr. Gibson.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. The District Court in this case committed error in dismissing the plaintiff's amended complaint at law. The error is clearly written, I believe, in the judge's written order on page 7, when the District Court did not apply the proper standard, which has been the standard of this Court since 1993 in Murray and 1996 in Murray and 2003 in Pillay. Without belaboring Your Honors, the District Court wrote that although a legally sophisticated reader may understand that the plaintiff could potentially bring claims against the defendant, there are no facts to suggest that such a reader, that a plaintiff actually intended to bring the claims. This potential and actual standard does not apply anywhere in Murray or Pillay. In Murray and Pillay, the standard for administrative notice to the government, as included in the Form 95, which was filed on behalf of the plaintiff, Ron Glade, is that the analysis must include greater liberality than a complaint at law to determine if it is adequate. And obviously,
where is notice that you're charging anything more than a intentional tort?
Judge, we give notice to the United States. The claim is against the United States. We give claims.
Yes, of course, but.
And there are a number of.
But
facts.
It looks from your submission that. You just talked about, you know, sexually abusing and assaulting Glade. That's the only offense that's the only tort that's mentioned, right?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, what's really important is the special relationship that the District Court did find, which was included and properly pleaded in the amended complaint at law. The facts in
Yeah, but what about your administrative notice? That's what I'm looking at.
And the facts in the complaint are exactly the same facts that are included in the Rule 95, which must be more liberally construed. Yes, we do have the facts about the sexual assault.
Yes, of course. Those are the critical facts, but they indicate an intentional tort.
With all due respect, Your Honor, the critical
facts. Where is some statement somewhere that indicates that you're charging, you know, the hospital with negligence?
That's what the special. First of all, the special relationship.
So where it is, show it to me, would you?
Yes, Judge. In the Form 95, we have all the facts stating that Mr. Glade had been disabled since.
I know the facts. Where's the charge of negligence against the hospital?
Well, the standard is what's reasonably.
Where is
implicit.
It? I mean, where did you say it?
Well, we didn't use the term negligence. I mean, didn't use the word negligence, Your Honor. What's included are the facts is that the special relationship was included in the facts that were included in the Form 95.
Okay, what did you say about the special relationship? Where is that?
Right, the special relationship is that Mr. Glade had been.
No, where is it pleaded? Where is it stated?
The terms, the words special relationship are not included in the Form 95.
What are the words that would place the agency on notice that it's being charged with negligence because it had a special relationship with.
The words are that he had been, since for 40 years, he had been under the care and treatment of the VA. And as the district court found, that was enough to substantiate a special relationship. He had been sexually abused as a child. He was discharged from the Navy in 1966. He'd been under the VA's care continuously. This is all in the Form 95. From 1966 to the time that he was sexually assaulted by the VA therapist who was assigned to be his
so
therapist.
So the VA has a special relationship with anyone who's under their treatment for a period of time.
Well, I don't know if you could say that.
They have to read that when they're looking at a tort claim notice that alleges a period of treatment that
well,
if it involves psychiatric issues only, let's say, that was a special relationship.
Well, I think the special relationship is if you said any time, if it was a 10-second emergency relationship, probably not. But if you're talking about 40 years where he's continuously under the VA's care and treatment for
well,
mental
suppose,
and emotional.
Pursuing Judge Tinder's question, suppose, okay, 40 years he goes to the same VA hospital and he doesn't have psychiatric problems, but he has other physical problems, health problems. And after 40 years, you know, he has an operation or something, and it's negligently performed. I'm sorry, it's not negligently performed. And suppose in this operation, a nurse assaults him the way this woman did, right? Would then the hospital be liable on the ground that his long continued treatment by the hospital had created a special relationship?
He may or may not. In this case, I think it's very clear that he had a special
relationship. I'm asking you about a different case.
I would say under those specific facts, probably not, and specifically in terms of that particular malpractice.
What's the difference?
Well, in this case, we have a situation where he had been as the district court found, he had a ward custodian relationship with the
VA.
What
do you mean? He lived there?
He lived in housing provided. No, he lived in housing provided by the VA. He had a counselor who was provided by the VA who was taking care of him. This special relationship, he is a totally disabled person since age 18. This isn't a situation where...
So would you make the same argument if he was totally disabled physically, if he were quadriplegic?
And he was being under the care and treatment of the VA, yes.
And then he's assaulted by a nurse?
Yes. They've undertaken the voluntary undertaking to have a special relationship with him. And as the case law states, this was a relationship that was formed before the actual attack. This isn't a situation, we're not pleading, you know, negligent supervision at the time. We're talking about the relationship that was accepted by the VA for 40 years of this man. He's completely under their care and treatment. And that's included in our Form 95 and the facts that we include.
Well, we usually think of special relationship as literal custodianship, as in a prison. So what would be a case like this where a special
relationship could be a caregiver?
What would be a case like this? Do you have cases that are like this?
I don't. My search
special
of the case...
Special relationships that don't involve any custodian.
I did not... My search of the law did not find any such cases, Judge.
Did you mention something about he's in a group home of some kind?
He's in he's been in different housing that the VA has provided based upon the budget of the VA. He has been in group homes. He's currently in an apartment. They have various apartments in Kenosha that they provide for.
Kenosha?
Is this a Wisconsin
or an Illinois?
Well, the actual assaults happened in Kenosha.
So this is Wisconsin?
Correct.
Okay, because I thought there might be some question on choice of law of where this relationship or whatever you want to call it took place.
Well, his therapist was actually assigned to him from the VA in North Chicago, which would be Illinois. So I know that issue hasn't come up in the district court. I don't think it has.
Is that a determination that has to be made? Is there something that could be different if the place of whatever relationship is in Illinois or Wisconsin?
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question, Judge. I have not researched Wisconsin law on special relationships. Again, that hasn't been an issue in the case.
All right.
Judge, my time is up. I'd like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay, that's fine, Mr. Gibson. Thank you. Mr. Miller?
May it please the court and counsel. We recognize that plaintiff's allegations in this case are very serious, but when Congress passed the Federal Tort Claims Act and waived sovereign immunity for certain types of negligence claims, it did put some limits on that waiver, and one of the specific limits was a bar to any claim arising out of an assault or battery. And that's exactly what this case is, and that's why this case is barred. Now, none of that is to say that plaintiff's allegations in this case are uncontested. In fact, we deny the allegations. But even if the court assumes the allegations to be true, as it must at this stage, the case cannot go forward because it falls squarely into one of those very specific categories of cases where Congress has said there's no waiver of sovereign immunity. Plaintiff has attempted to avoid the assault and battery exception by asserting a negligent supervision claim and a special relationship theory, but that just doesn't work for a couple reasons. First of all, because the only claim presented by the plaintiff in his administrative claim was a sexual assault claim based on respondeat superior liability. And everybody agrees that that type of claim is barred by the assault and battery exception, and that's what the plaintiff is limited to at this point because of the exhaustion requirement. And then secondly, even if exhaustion is not required, and plaintiff were free to start with a blank slate in the district court, his new theory of negligent supervision and a special relationship is directly dependent upon the employment relationship between plaintiff's therapist, the alleged assaulter here, and her VA supervisors. And under the Supreme Court's decision in Sheridan, that type of claim where there's still a direct relationship to the employment relationship of the attacker is still barred under the assault and battery exception. Talking more specifically about the failure to exhaust in this case, what's missing from the administrative complaint is the pertinent facts. That's the standard in Pillay and also Murray, the pertinent facts that would support a negligent supervision claim. There's no allegations about VA supervisors failing to monitor or supervise the therapist. There's no allegations about any type of wrongdoing by VA supervisors or other employees. In fact, the administrative complaint does just the opposite. It alleges, or it says, that the VA employees did exactly what they were supposed to do, which is as soon as they learned about the allegation, they reported it and an investigation was done. The administrative claim also failed to make any mention of any sort of special relationship or anything like that. And likewise, it doesn't present any facts or any theory where liability is based on something other than the attacker or the alleged attacker's employment status. The only theory of liability in that administrative complaint is one where it's the attacker at issue. And what that adds up to is that plaintiff has failed to allege the pertinent facts that would support a negligent supervision claim. With respect to the new theory, again, if we put aside the administrative exhaustion requirement, respect to the new theory of negligent supervision and an independent duty, that also fails.
You suggest in your brief that even if there were a special relationship and negligence by her supervisors, there wouldn't be liability because the claim would have arisen out of the battery?
It's because the theory of liability under that negligent supervision theory is directly related to the attacker's employment status. In other words, it wouldn't make sense to have a negligent supervision claim against VA managers and supervisors if the attacker was not an employee of the VA. So when you have that type of relationship, when your theory of liability is
the opposite, that when if the attacker, I mean, you discussed a case, children left alone and are molested by strangers, and you said that would be a proper case for.
Right. The reason in that case the claim was permitted to go forward is because the employment status of the attacker was irrelevant. So in that case, it could have been, and they didn't actually know in that case, but in that case it could have been an outsider from the public who was the attacker of the children. And likewise, it also could have been another federal daycare worker who was the attacker of the children. They just didn't know. But it didn't matter. The theory could still go forward.
If the tort is committed by an employee and it's an excluded tort, then we stop there. Isn't that your argument?
No. In theory, there can be a situation where even if it's an employee of the government, you may still have a claim if your theory of liability is entirely independent of the attacker's employment status. So in the daycare example, the theory of liability was that some federal daycare workers were negligent in leaving the children alone.
Well, what if one of the employees had molested the children?
Well, you could still pursue that theory if it turned out that it was another federal worker that had actually molested the children. You could still pursue that theory about the workers who left the children alone without.
And why is this case different?
Well, because in this case, the theory that plaintiff's trying to present, again, if you put aside the exhaustion problem,
right.
But if you put aside that problem, the theory that the plaintiff is going forward with is one that does depend on the therapist's employment status. Because what plaintiff is alleging is that the therapist's supervisors, her VA supervisor, failed to monitor her or supervisor appropriately. And you could only make that sort of claim if she were an employee of the VA. If she were an outsider, if she were somebody from the public, you couldn't make that sort of claim where you're saying, oh, the VA supervisors should have supervised her in a better manner.
Let me hit the early question, and I guess that maybe it isn't an issue, about the where this occurrence took place, whether it's Illinois or Wisconsin. Is that not an issue here about choice of law? And what
well, there's possibly a choice of law issue there. I think that the pleadings at this stage were vague enough that I believe there's allegations about this alleged sexual assault occurring on multiple occasions. And because there's a connection to North Chicago and also a connection to Wisconsin, it's possible that those allegations could cover both those locations. So it may well be that there's Illinois law applicable to the alleged conduct in Illinois and Wisconsin law applicable.
Is that because some of the supervisors in Chicago? Or he wasn't in Chicago, was he?
Right. His home was not in Chicago, but... right. This therapist was assigned out of a North Chicago facility, and therefore the supervisors were located there. And some of the conduct, at least if you read the complaint broadly, could have occurred in Illinois.
Right.
If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. So, Mr. Gibson, how much time does he have? 2 minutes? Okay.
Judge, just to address the issue brought up by Mr. Miller in terms of the Federal Tort Claims Act, I think there's a misunderstanding here that special relationship, once there's an undertaking and a special relationship is formed, that relationship means that they have to protect and not be negligent to Mr. Glade so he doesn't get hurt. He got hurt by an employee of the VA. That's not in dispute. It doesn't matter if it's an employee or a non-employee. The point is that once you have a special relationship, the idea that the Federal Tort Claims Act assault and battery bar would apply simply doesn't hold water under the facts that we have with a special relationship.
What did the negligence of her supervisors consist in?
Well, again, in the broad allegations are improper supervision, training, investigation.
But were they given any warnings about her? Or?
Well, quite honestly, Judge, we were barred by the district court of getting discovery. So
I see. Right.
There were statements taken of our client that we have not gotten. Statements taken of Lisa Story, the VA, which we have not gotten, because it was barred before we could get to that point.
Thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gibson, Mr. Miller. Next case for argument, United States.